Welcome one and all to another episode of The Damage Report with me, John Arola, and very lucky to be joined by the just post birthday boy, Jordan Yule. How's it going, Jordan? Good to have you back.
Thanks for having me, John.
Glad to have you here. I know that you're a busy man. I know that you dive deep on a regular basis into the news. We're going to be diving into quite a bit here too. But I want to give you an opportunity to talk about your work. What have you been focusing on recently? What's been keeping your attention?
Lots of stuff. On deep dive, we talked about the primaries Tuesday. That did not go, I think, as great as some progressives wanted, with Andy Levin losing and Lucas Kuntz losing. And over on Substack, I've been writing a lot about oil profits, inflation, the price of housing. And then I had a piece in Newsweek recently on how the price of housing impacts millennials, and how because of the rates and also student loan debt, it's pushing people back years into their homeownership plans.
Yeah. Yeah, by the way, if people don't know, your work there is amazing. You've been pumping out absolutely great. But I do have a bit of a bone to pick with you, because I was perfectly content to just despise that entire platform, because it seems like only, you know, like right wing grifters that have like the lingering sort of aura of having been on the left kind of at one point use it. But then you're doing great work there. Come on, I want to just hate it. Don't make me have to give it a chance. But anyway, yeah, you've been doing great work. Everyone should definitely follow that. And we should also follow along with our show, because we got a lot to talk about, including some breaking news, by the way, some investigations, some new charges, Alex Jones looking like an absolute madman, our lives, the fate of our civilization, up to Kyrsten Sinema, isn't that grand? And I'm gonna make Jordan, if you're watching the full show, talk about the MCU. So stay tuned for that. Also, Cracker Barrel. We only talk about it 2 to 4 times a week. It's gonna be one of those days today. So Cracker Barrel and the MCU, the perfect joining of all of my interests, I guess. But anyway, in advance of that, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button so that people get the notifications, so the stream's live and all that. And if you wanna send us any comments, tweets, super chats, or anything, we will respond to those as we go. But with all that said, ready to start the show? I think he's mad at me for the MCU talk.
I'm dreading it.
What's that? Okay.
I'm dreading the MCU talk.
It's not like diving into it. It's in your interest. It's in your wheelhouse. Don't worry. Okay. Yeah. For now, though, we are going to jump into something completely different. Let's go immediately into this.
We allege that the defendants knew their actions in falsifying the affidavit could create a dangerous situation. And we allege these unlawful acts resulted in Ms. Taylor's death. The charges announced today also allege that the officers responsible for falsifying the affidavit that led to the search took steps to cover up their unlawful conduct after Ms. Taylor was killed. We allege that defendants Janes and Goodlett conspired to knowingly falsify an investigative document that was created after Ms. Taylor's death. We also allege that they conspired to mislead federal, state, and local authorities who were investigating the incident. For example, we allege that in May 2020, those two defendants met in a garage where they agreed to tell investigators a false story. This indictment separately alleges that defendant Meany lied to the FBI during its investigation of this matter.
So I didn't think that there was anything more to learn, you know, following the tragic killing several years ago of Breonna Taylor. But no, apparently there was. Garland now revealing what must have been a long ongoing investigation into the preemptive and after the fact cover up and falsification of the grounds of the raid that resulted in her death. The investigation into it, apparently, like, and this is gonna shock people who believe the cops are trustworthy still in 2022. No, they lied. They lied to get the warrant to do the no-knock raid that resulted in her death. Apparently, according to Merrick Garland, the cops who actually conducted it did not know about this. That's what they're saying. Although one is now being separately charged with excessive force. We will give you some details on that. So not only did they lie in advance of it, but then it was effectively a conspiracy. They met up in secret to talk about the story they were going to tell, to lie about what happened to Breonna Taylor. And then while the investigations, the multiple investigations were ongoing, they jointly and separately deceived those investigators so that justice would never be achieved. Jordan, it's this story was already absolutely devastating, terrible from the very beginning, and it's only getting worse even years out.
Right. I think I see a lot of people, a lot of viewers chatting that they're not surprised, but relieved that this is happening, and I share those thoughts. This is just totally unsurprising. That's what police do. It's what it happens all over the country. This is not an anomaly. Advocates, people who were formerly in the DOJ in the Obama years, especially during Ferguson and the Freddie Gray uprising in Baltimore, have been sounding the alarm for years that one of the problems in achieving accountability in these cases is police unions and how they have structured into their agreements the ability to create these long periods before they even have to file these reports. And that's used internally as an opportunity for all of them to get their story straight, whether it's in their garage or even in the precinct. That's what they do. And that's why it's so hard to get justice for people who are killed by police or even just harmed by police, because they have this rigged system where they can all meet covertly and say, okay, well, we're just all going to say this. How do you penetrate that? So this isn't surprising. Cops lie. It's what they do. They aren't here to protect you. They're here to protect capitalist interests. I'm glad this is happening, but this should have been happening years ago and at the local level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. You're totally right. What you just said will anger so many people. Well, it would anger them if they weren't, and I'm willing to bet this in advance, going to completely ignore this development or come up with some way to imply that Merrick Garland is just doing this for political something. It's Merrick Garland goes woke all over the cops. I don't know what they're going to say, but look at this. It's a case of a 100% innocent woman, a black woman being murdered, the cops actively engaging in a conspiracy to cover it up. This is, in theory at least, a teachable moment for the country to come to grips with, as you pointed out, that this is what cops do all too regularly. And yet, I don't know, what do you have to predict that Tucker Carlson is going to have to say about this? I mean, he's just earlier this week was lying about how George Floyd died, you know, to cover up for the cop murdering him, to launder the reputation of the cops. I don't know how he's going to do it here, but that's his thing. He's going to have to try, Jordan.
If he talks about it, I would imagine he will try to frame it as these cops made an honest mistake. And now, the woke DOJ wants to ruin their lives. Do you think you should have your life ruined if you make an honest mistake? He'll try to play up to people's, you know, sympathy or, you know, like they're. Yeah. I think their empathy for allowing people to make mistakes. And that's just not the case here. It wasn't like, oh, whoops, we got the wrong apartment. Like they lied about the warrant to get in, that she was sleeping and they killed her. I mean, these are trigger happy cops. And I think he would use it to fuel like, oh, not only are they going to do this, they also want to defund the police. They want to ban police completely in your city. They want crime to run amok in your town and just try to scare his viewers. That's what he excels at.
Yeah, imagine if we had a media in our country. I mean, we have a media, but imagine if we had a good one. And I know some people believe that we do. Again, they might have been listening to Tucker Carlson just last night when he said that Hungary, for instance, has a more free media than ours. America needs to look at this and not look away and draw some actual lessons from it. Reform the police based on it. Reform what you think about the cops, your willingness to accept at face value what the cops have to say. Reform that. And not just regular people at home or anything like that. Like if you're local news, if you're state level news, you're working at one of these newspapers, they're still regularly just taking whatever's handed to them by the police and saying, oh no, this is the word of God. We're just gonna slap this up there. How could you after this, after the lies that we know they told about George Floyd? I can, like, there's so many killings like this that there are some that I can't remember the particular names, but where they had dragged people out of their cars after chase and beaten them to death and then implied that they died in accidents during the, like, you cannot simply believe what the cops say anymore, but far too many people still do. And one other unrelated thing. So I guess Merrick Garland is still alive. I guess he technically still can do stuff. So that's good. By the way, he's doing the right thing here, at least at first glance. It seems fine. But you know, going after the cops is great. Could you go after some other powerful people though? Maybe even more powerful people, Merrick Garland? Wouldn't that be grand?
It does help him save face when he's just been mercilessly attacked over the past couple months for not really doing anything in response to the January 6th committee. So this is a good positive PR move for him. I do think his motives here are altruistic. I think he has a good sense of, you know, justice and fairness. I think he could be doing more, but this is like, I don't think this is just purely opportunistic and cynical. I do think they see how obviously like BS this is.
Sure. Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah. Yeah, and I know we're supposed to, like, every time one of these people does like the smallest thing, we're supposed to pat them on the head, stroke their hair, and tell them they're beautiful or whatever. Like you described it as altruistic. I would describe it as your GD job. This is what you're supposed to do. It ain't charity. It's literally the only thing you're there for. But anyway, you are more understanding and charitable than I am. You're the altruistic one, Jordan. Anyway, with that said, we'll get more details, I'm sure, on this as time goes by. This is what we know right now. And with that, why don't we launch into what was going to be our regularly scheduled first story, starting with this.
Any update on the Inflation Reduction Act? I know you've been taking your time.
So as you know, we don't have comment. We're going to wait to see what comes out of the parliamentarian process, so she's reviewing the text. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That reporter had the utter gall to ask a senator to weigh in on the most important piece of legislation being considered and got that little look from Kyrsten Sinema. And that's honestly the most polite I've seen her be to a reporter in literally years. So thank you, Senator, for being so open-minded. But anyway, we are waiting to find out what's going to happen with her. And some dribs and drabs of insider information is starting to come out. So we're going to sift through that and see what we can learn. But in anticipation of that, the national debate about her role is already making me so angry on a daily basis. Here is a front page of an article from the Washington Post that at first glance might not seem that bad. Democrats weigh reducing new taxes to get Sinema's vote for climate bill. That's already terrible that you would have to do that. But under it, it says, the senator from Arizona, a centrist fiscal hawk, previously raised concerns about plans to raise federal tax laws. That's what she is. She's just a centrist fiscal hawk. She is always concerned about excess spending, which is why she holds up military budgets in the same way that she holds up climate bills and all that. She definitely wants to reduce all of our spending, not just the spending that's inconvenient to corporations. First of all, she has basically the exact same position on corporate taxes as every Republican. And yes, a lot of Democrats in this country. That's not centrist. That's not in the center. She's not agreeing with the vast majority of people. She is a radical pro-corporate senator. But the Washington Post is there with their invented words, centrist and moderate, ready to just dole it out to whoever upholds the current economic status quo. And raised concerns about plans. Okay, but you're a journalist, okay? Tony Rahm and Jeff Stein, who does some good work, by the way, raised concerns. Could you maybe get into why she's raising concerns, what her actual concerns might be? Because I got news for you. The words she's saying aren't the only relevant facts. The way she's voted, what she's obstructed, the money she's taken, the promises she's gone back on, the former positions of hers that now seem laughable by comparison. The fact that she was a Green Party member who now just might tank the only climate legislation likely to happen this decade. All of that seems worth talking about. Now we're gonna dive into some of her concerns and what might happen to this bill. But Jordan, what are you thinking about the process so far?
On that point, calling her a centrist fiscal hawk, and this happens so often in media when talking about people who block bills or legislation that could help people. It's always framed as this fiscal responsibility thing. And here you have a bill and a proposal that would implement a 15% corporate minimum tax. And there are so many, I think there were dozens and dozens, maybe a couple hundred of companies that had effectively a 0% tax rate in 2020. And when you have those same companies, many of them S&P 500 companies, with CEO to median worker pay ratios of thousands to one or several hundred to one, the average on the S&P 500 is 324 to one. We just found out because the AFL-CIO did a report on this. But the median worker pay at some of these big, these giant corporations is well below the poverty line. And those same people are relying on government programs to make ends meet. Why is that not factored in? When those companies aren't paying their fair share, when those companies aren't paying workers a fair living wage, when they then have to turn around and rely on government programs to make ends meet, why is that not factored into the conversation? Because I would say these people who are blocking these proposals and then pushing those workers onto government programs to survive aren't being fiscally responsible. Because the easy solution there is just make those giant companies who are posting record profits pay their fair share, not have the government subsidize their workers' living conditions.
Yeah, it's insane that maybe we'll get the 15% minimum tax rate. Like I know, I'm sure that if you were to look, the New York Times has probably done some good work, you know, laying out, as I know you talk about constantly, the absolutely absurd zero or negative tax rate of some of these corporations and billionaires. But like the fact that she gets to dictate the conversation around this, no, those facts should be dictating. You should not be able to read an update about this process, about the IRA, without seeing the absolute economic murder that these corporations and wealthy individuals are getting away with. And that is how you should be armed as you go into sentences like, cinema has concerns with the structure of the 15% corporate minimum book tax and whether the burden could get passed down to employees. Yes, it's such a burden for corporations making billions in profits to be taxed at 15% for the first time ever. Look, trying to whatever extent structure it so that you can stop that from happening would be great. But you need to be like, and I'm saying to the journalists here, her supposed concerns about it being passed down, if that results in her not allowing it to happen, maybe you should be a little bit suspicious about whether that was actually her concern in the first place or whether it's a convenient ruse. Anyway, she supposedly supports cracking down on tax avoidance, but has long voiced her opposition to closing the carried interest loophole. So what is the carried interest loophole? Well, we know that it's a thing that a lot of people don't have to deal with, so we try to define it as often as we can. Carried interest is the percentage of profits that hedge fund managers receive from lucrative investments. But that compensation is taxed at a lower capital gains rate that maxes out at 23.8%, doesn't face a higher income tax rate like most Americans pay on wages from their job. And look, I'm not an economist, I'm not an expert on this. But I would say, what is carried interest? It is a term that was made up to confuse you. It's money they earned. It's their income. That's all it is. Now, it's fancy pants income for wealthy people who wear suits to work, I guess. That's great income. You dum-dums make stupid income. That's real income that we're going to tax at a super high rate. But if you're super rich, then we're going to call it something else and make it seem really arcane and unapproachable. That's why these terms exist. It is technically true. It's carried interest, but it's also a propaganda tactic to make you think, oh, I don't understand taxes. I don't understand tax reform. Maybe they could simplify it at some point, but in a way that I can't understand. So they're getting taxed way less on their income than you, despite the fact that they make 10, 50, 100 times much as you. That's the way that it basically works. She says that provision, actually taxing them at the same rate as, you know, any random person would for their income, could undermine economic competitiveness. That's what it is. I think that's her concerns. I think wealthy people have sent her to Washington because of abstract concerns about economic competitiveness, not their bank accounts. They would never be so crass and selfish to worry about that. It's probably something abstract that floats around that you can read about on Wikipedia. It's probably that she's mostly concerned about, Jordan.
I mean, it's obviously bogus, but I mean, this is just a Republican talking point. And it's even funnier that it's coming from a Democrat, like way outside of Wall Street. Like, it's not Schumer saying this. It's not Gillibrand. It's a senator in Arizona, as if she's like deeply invested in the profitability of like Wall Street financial firms. That's just like, it never It never stops being confusing. But this is ultimately a Republican talking point. And there's nothing, like the thing is, what people don't understand is a lot of those trades and a lot of that money making is done through algorithms and computers. There's nothing that, like, no increased profits is going to create new jobs or innovate new technologies or anything like that. They already have what they need. They're just trying to maximize it as long as they can. And I would argue that lowering the personal tax rate and increasing their tax rate for working people at home, if they had a lower tax burden, and if they didn't have to pay as much as they had in taxes, you would see actually more investment and more creativity and more development. Because that would free up a ton of disposable income for people to either start their own company or start their own business or start a passion project, something they really care about, something they want to do on the side. And they had a little bit more money at home and it could stretch a little bit further. They could make ends meet and they had room in their life to do something they cared about. You would see a much better society than if we taxed a bunch of Wall Street cokeheads a little bit less.
Exactly. No, 100%. And look, what do those Wall Street cokeheads have like in their side to bring this fight? Endless money, literally endless. It's just made up. They just put numbers in a computer and that's how much money they have. And they have the media. They have the Washington Post. They have look at these quotes. Look at how utterly insulting this is. So first of all, just briefly, let's acknowledge that on Tuesday, Sinema had a call with Arizona's Chamber of Commerce. Did she have a call with you? Do you live in Arizona? You're an activist in Arizona. Did she have a call with you? I doubt it. I really, really doubt it. But she talked to them. And then there's this, and I think this is amazing. So the private equity industry, which has contributed heavily to Sinema, so Axios is acknowledging that, is lobbying her heavily on shooting down the carried interest portion. So the carried interest, remember, that's about the whole like investment income, blah, 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 getting taxed at a lower rate. Quote, I remember last year she was hearing feedback from small business owners concerned about the potential implications of any tax policy changes and how it might affect their capital investment streams. There is not a small business in America that's worried about their carried interest going forward. It's not like a mom and pop bakery is like, you know, we have all these massive investments in pork bellies on Wall Street and I'm a little bit worried about what might happen if there's a small increase in the amount that I'm taxed on it. They are spitting in your face with sentences like that. That's all it is. Small business no longer means literally anything. A small, you know, like a small hedge fund, you know, in the $1 to $2 trillion range, they're worried about their investment cash flow. Jordan, it's not a world that I necessarily understand, but I do understand when someone's insulting me and I'm getting a big whiff of insult off of this.
They know that the media is just going to serve as a megaphone for these false concerns too. Like you pointed it out, they're not, that money those small businesses are making, they're paying a different tax rate and they're operating under a different structure than Wall Street. This only benefits multimillionaires and billionaires. That's it, that's who makes their, and Wall Street firms, that's who makes their money this way. That's who makes their money on the market, not, you know, mom and pop cheese shops in Arizona. So it's absurd that this is still working. They know they can just go to, you know, access oriented outlets like Axios or Washington Post and launder these quotes into the media and that becomes the narrative. And the Chamber of Commerce, people really need to see through what that is. That is a business interest front group. I know a lot of viewers understand that, but she also was with them a few months ago speaking at one of their quarterly or monthly events. And pledged not to support anything that would increase corporate taxes at all. And that got a robust round of applause from the crowd. But that's largely a Republican group that who she's speaking to and who she's making that pledge to. And it shows who she's serving, whose interests she's serving in Congress. And that's corporate, capitalist, and Republican interests.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, with that, we do have to take our first break. We come back, we've got some, like, first of all, updates on the Brittany Griner situation. We've got some Alex Jones we gotta get to, including Parker Malloy surfaced this video of Jones from the late 90s that is just amazing. So we're gonna compare current Jones to 90s Jones. So don't go anywhere, we'll be right back. Okay, we're about to jump into some very serious stuff. Hold on, Jeff Testpile says, Peter Navarro is far less qualified than you, John. Okay, I'll add him to the list. Also, Peter Navarro. Also, most of Obama's economic advisors. Anyway, with that said, we need to get into some serious stuff. WNBA star Brittany Griner has been found guilty of the charges that she was facing while she's been in Russia. She now faces 9 years in prison. We've got some pictures there. We can bring up another one. This is just the latest horrible development in her detainment in Russia. It is, I think, for many people, it is the worst case scenario coming out of this. And it is, it's a topic. It's a piece of news that a lot of people in America, as well as in the American government, have been focused on because it's become sort of a tiny little capsule proxy battle for what's going on between Russia and Ukraine. And perhaps to that end, Joe Biden's response to it came almost immediately. Take a look at this.
President Biden says just moments ago today, American citizen Brittany Griner received a prison sentence that is one more reminder of what the world already knew. Russia is wrongfully detaining Brittany, he writes. It's unacceptable, and I call on Russia to release her immediately so she can be with her wife, loved ones, friends, and teammates. He adds, my administration will continue to work tirelessly and pursue every possible avenue to bring Brittany and Paul Whelan home safely as soon as possible. Savannah, the words of President Biden within the last couple of minutes.
Exactly. And I believe shortly after that, they reiterated that they are going to get her back. They haven't defined exactly how that would happen. And I found this to be shocking. I guess, man, time flies by. You don't realize it's been 6 months that she's already. That is insane. If the judge announced we're sending her home today, it would already be an unimaginable injustice against Brittany Griner. But the fact that she could face this time for less than 1 gram of cannabis oil. We're very used, Jordan, in America to not receiving justice or anything like it. But this is like satire. This is parody of how bad things normally are.
Yeah, this is truly disgusting. She really didn't do anything that severe. I hope they secure her release as soon as they can. And I think the best thing the United States could do is not only work to secure Brittany Griner's release for having cannabis oil, but also releasing everyone in American prisons who are in there for marijuana charges. So if you recognize that abroad, that is a total injustice, you should do so domestically too. It is not something anybody should be incarcerated over. Freeing and expunging the records of everyone who has a cannabis charge would be the least they can do to show a thorough commitment to justice on this front.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those areas that we've often pointed out that Joe Biden could do a lot on. If he actually cared to, he could single-handedly do a lot. And there's nothing the Senate parliamentarian could do about it. There's nothing Kyrsten Sinema or Joe Manchin or any of the other people who often get to serve as president can do about it if he wanted to. It is insane that in 2022, there is any place on earth, let alone some of the wealthiest, most supposedly advanced countries on earth, where you can get locked up over this stuff, that you would suffer any consequences whatsoever. It is utterly irrelevant. Cannabis oil, actual cannabis, whatever. It has no negative effect on anyone else. It is totally up to people. We allow them to consume all sorts of far more deleterious substances on a regular basis. And we not only allow it, we encourage it. We live in an insane world. But to that end, actually, I wanna play this next video of Brittany Griner's apologizing for something that she should not have to apologize for, but she is trying to get out of there. And here is what she had to say before that sentencing.
I wanna apologize to my teammates, my club, Gemka, the fans in the city of DCAT for my mistake that I made and the embarrassment that I brought onto them. I want to also apologize to my parents, my siblings, my Phoenix American Earth organization back at home, the amazing women of the WNBA, and my amazing spouse back at home. I never meant to hurt anybody. I never meant to put in jeopardy the Russian population. I never meant to break any laws here. I made an honest mistake, and I hope that in your ruling that it doesn't end my life here. I know everybody keeps talking about political pawn in politics, but I hope that that is far from this courtroom. I want to say again that I had no intent on breaking any Russian laws. I had no intent. I did not conspire or plan to commit this crime.
I totally understand why she would need to put out a statement like that, but she should not have had to say a single word like that. Nothing that she did is anyone's business other than her own. That she would have to imply that she didn't want to harm the Russian people. It's cannabis oil. It's cannabis oil. You know what else has harmed the Russian people in the 6 months that she's been detained? A totally needless war that has resulted in 40 to 50,000 of their soldiers being needlessly killed. This is that much cannabis oil. That's the big issue, Jordan. We should really expect some consequences for that.
Yeah, it shows what a brutal system they have there is. And again, like to reiterate, we're not exempt in that regard. We have the highest prison population per capita in the world. So it's like, it's weird that we're, you know, having this collective moment of outrage when it's like, okay, well, have we looked at home yet? Like, I hope this is a moment.
Well, but of course we want it changed here immediately too. Like I would go way beyond legalizing cannabis. Yeah.
We want to fix things, but like, I think there's a good segment of our population who doesn't want to do anything and thinks it's just fine. Yeah. And it's, I hope that we can have a healthy national conversation. I'm pessimistic that we ever will, but I hope this is a moment where we can look and think like, okay, this is absurd. Nobody should be sentenced to 9 years in prison for something so trivial. It's just totally archaic. And they're obviously using her as a pawn in this broader geopolitical conflict. And it like you mentioned, this, the casualties in the war, this is just another human being caught in the crossfire of a broader geopolitical conflict. And I feel really, really bad for her because she did nothing to deserve this.
Okay, with that said, we're gonna move on to our B block. And I regret to inform the audience that we do need to talk about Alex Jones. It's not the world or the news cycle that I would choose if it was up to me. We would just be previewing the next few phases of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But unfortunately, it's not up to me. And these are the rich, powerful people breaking the law. So we're gonna talk about it. But we're gonna start off with him finally acknowledging reality for perhaps the first time in his life. Let's jump into this video.
Do you understand now that it was absolutely irresponsible of you to do that?
It was, especially since I've met the parents. And it's 100% real, as I said on the radio yesterday. And as I said here yesterday, it's 100% real. And the media still ran with lies that I was saying it wasn't real on air yesterday. It's incredible. They won't let me take it back. They just want to keep me in the position of being the Sandy Hook man.
Okay, that's the position that you put yourself in. You made the conscious choice during your production meetings that you are going to constantly reiterate that this terrible massacre was falsified by the government for your own personal enrichment, both in terms of your fame and audience, but also, let's keep it real, specifically for money. You did that show after show after show after show for literally years. And so it is cute of you to want to take that back. You're not gonna be giving back the money that you made, the views that you got. You can't take back the damage that was done to those families. You just acknowledged that you talked to them. So you've heard about their pain, but the fact that they've been driven from houses, they've been driven from states, trying to avoid your fans hounding them for literally years over the deaths of their kids. Can that be taken back? Can you make them right? Can you fix the years of their life that you've stolen? You can't and you won't. You don't want to. And notice there that finally admitting that it was true, that's like a moment where, oh good, he can learn. Oh wait, 7 or 8 seconds later, he's making about him once again and about his pain, that he is the victim in all of this. And look, there's a lot more else that was going on in that case. We're gonna get into some more of the ridiculous stuff that happened yesterday, but Jordan, like he's finally admitting it. Do you believe that he means it, that he actually acknowledges that it's real? He's saying it in court, but does he mean it?
I think he's saying what he needs to say to try to win this case, and that's it. He yesterday, I don't know if you saw when they had the jury was able to submit questions and the judge read them questions. And I was a little concerned about how that's going to dictate the fate of this case, because some of them were like, how can we know you're really remorseful? Would you be willing to join the groups started by parents to advocate for safer schools? Like things like that. It's just like, that is such a softball, because of course he's going to say yes. And he did. But the thing here is, he always knew Sandy Hook was real. Absolutely. Day one, he knew it was real. He intentionally lied about it to his audience for views, for engagement bait, like for outrage cycles, because that's his whole scheme. It's pushing these things to get people fired up because no one else is going to say it. So that carves out a unique niche for him. And he frames it as, oh, I'm just questioning the official narrative. Day one when it happened, he knew it was real, just as he knows it's real today. And he intentionally lied and created an absolute horror for already grieving parents. I can't even imagine what that must be like to lose a six-year-old in a shooting. And he lied, and what the lawyers, what the plaintiff's lawyers pointed out, for massive, massive profit on things like huge markups on survival prep food and brain pills and, you know, miracle cure type stuff, which is so absurd because you could draw a through line from the origins of conspiracy culture, like the flat earth movement. The guy who started that, he was a miracle cure guy who was basically just selling soda water. Kelly Weil, in her book Off the Edge, detailed his history. It's fantastic. I would encourage people to read it. But you could just draw a through line from early conspiracy culture and miracle cures to Alex Jones and now in his miracle cures and how that's popular in conspiracy circles. It's really, really sad how we just repeat the same mistakes.
Yeah, and look, it makes sense. It's like the scam emails that they're riddled with errors so that they can self-select for people who have no critical thinking skills. The only people that will contact them are the ones who you can convince of anything. So the only people that are gonna make it through the water is making the frogs gay stuff, well, they have such a tenuous grasp on causality that, yeah, you can probably convince them that they won't be able to have sex unless they take your ground up gorilla bone paste or whatever. And they make tons of money. We're actually gonna get into how much money, but really fast. We're not gonna play all the stuff about his phone. It is hilarious. I'm sure many people watching this at this point have seen that his lawyers accidentally turned over all of his text messages. I'm worried that it's a ploy for him to say that his lawyers were incompetent to try to appeal it. A little bit worried about that, but he lied constantly and he was shown to lie constantly. So it's Mark Bankston, right? I believe.
Yeah. Yes.
Bankston. Anyway, he displayed one of the text messages that supposedly Jones had not sent. An editor who worked for Jones sent him a screenshot of an InfoWars article claiming a hospital was using dummies in a coronavirus ward. The editor, Paul Watson, wrote that it makes us look ridiculous and added Sandy Hook all over again. Jones texted back, I get it. So yes, he was communicating about Sandy Hook. And yes, they do believe that literally everything that is bad, that would be inconvenient to their narrative, their political ideology, it is all a false flag. Every single shooting, every massacre, but also public health stuff, economic stuff, weather stuff, it's all faked. He lied about using emails, saying that he had never sent an email. Then Bankston displayed emails that Jones had sent to lawyers, staff, and others about his business operations. So he was lying about that. They pointed out that Jones claimed that he had lost millions of dollars because he was deplatformed. He was still apparently making $200,000 a day, in some cases $800,000 some days. And so the estimate of him making $300 million a year is probably an overestimate, but it ain't a 100 times overestimate. He was pulling in tens, at the very least, of millions of dollars off of spreading these sorts of conspiracy theories. So a little bit of feigned brief remorse that's almost immediately turned to his own advantage to make himself look like a victim, that cannot counteract the fact that this guy has made hundreds of millions of dollars off of actively deluding people, even if it results in harassment and violence against those who've survived terrible acts of violence already. Really fast, he says this one, he accepts that it's real. Okay, I have some follow-up questions. When he said that the Highland Park parade shooter had FBI handlers, so that was another false flag. Where does he stand on that one? When he actively spread misinformation about the Uvalde shooter being transgender, because, you know, he's part of the right. So they have to make everything about making the transgender community look like a threat. Does he regret that one? Has he talked to the families? When he like finally denounced Q, that seemed like maybe a good moment, except that he immediately turned to say he's against it because the FBI and CIA have taken it over and they've used Q to cover up the fact that the 2020 election was a hoax. That was a false flag. January 6th also was a hoax. Literally all of it is. Getting him on the stand to admit to one thing just seems so irrelevant in comparison to the absolute tsunami of lies and misinformation that come from him every single day, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, I think the QAnon thing for him was more just trying to beat back his competition. Because when it reached critical mass and became as popular as it did, he started to sour on it because it was like, hey, I'm losing my grip on these people. Like I need them back in my fold. So yeah, trying to attack them, attack the people behind it and demonize that, I think was more of a strategic play than one built around any totally incoherent theory. But yeah, Nevertheless, like I think that was his motive there. The damage he's done beyond this is just incalculable. And they've tried to say, oh, well, in court in this case, well, he's only talked about it like 8 hours over several years compared to thousands and thousands of hours of everything else. And it's like, that doesn't include how those clips get spread, how people rewatch these things, the view time on different platforms, not just talking time. It doesn't operate like that. As anyone here knows, that's just not how the internet works. And then the people who just repeat it and believe it and take it to heart and act on it, watch it repeatedly. Like that's just, you really can't quantify just how damaging his stuff has been. And I don't think it's, I see some people saying, oh, this should be a free speech thing. This should be a free press thing. It's like when you have people threatening, you're inciting them to threaten victims, parents of victims of school shootings. I just don't really have any sympathy for a First Amendment argument there. That's about it. That's about like the only place in this type of stuff that I really don't have any First Amendment sympathies for.
Okay, we have 7 minutes. I think for now we are gonna have to go ahead to our D block. As you all get that ready, I just wanna show this. So I occasionally get things from members of the audience, and I got this from Chantel Lewis, and it says, I'm 10 years old, and I enjoy watching the news with my family. I'm also a huge fan of the Dragon Squad. And then it says, open the folder, which I will. And thank you, that's so nice of you. And then there's art of the Dragon Squad.
Oh, let's go.
How cool is that? I absolutely love that. Thank you, Chantel. I don't know, hopefully Chantel's watching right now. I don't know for sure, but thank you so much for watching and being interested in the news at your age. I was not watching the news at 10, I will tell you that. I wasn't watching it that much at 18, honestly. So you are, of course, the future, and the future is looking bright. So thank you for that. With that said, let's jump into one more big piece of very recent news, starting with this.
Nevertheless, that is what the legislature has enacted, and it's not for him to put himself above that and say that he is not going to enforce the laws. We don't elect people in one part of the state to have veto power over what the entire state decides on these important issues. The Constitution of Florida has vested the veto power in the governor, not in individual state attorneys. And so when you flagrantly violate your oath of office, when you make yourself above the law, you have violated your duty, you have neglected your duty, and you are displaying a lack of competence to be able to perform those duties. And so today we are suspending State Attorney Andrew Warren, effective immediately.
That was an announcement that happened just earlier today. You know, they're gonna talk about state law, state constitution, whatever. This is Ron DeSantis once again, saying who gives a damn about the law or the constitution or hypocrisy or whatever. There's this guy, Andrew Warren, the 13th Circuit State Attorney, who has said that in some cases he's not going to go along with the absolutely insane policies and directives of Ron DeSantis when it comes to denying, for instance, trans people the medical care that they seek. DeSantis's efforts to strip away abortion rights and those sorts of things, he's not going to go along with that. And that is literally the only reason that this is happening. The fact that there was cheers there at the end tells you all that you need to know. This is not like an unfortunate action that a state executive needs to take to make sure that the law is followed. This is a celebratory thing. He is delivering for his audience a war against the supposed woke people. He called him woke in this. And like, he is just doing it because he sees the path to the White House being paved on the bodies of trans people, of gay people, over CRT and all of that. Like, screw people who want to get abortions, who've had those rights their entire lives, Jordan. This is just a, I don't even know what term to use. Like, I've never seen anything like this before. This is like sort of like a sacrifice being given to that insane radical base of his.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the same guy who just a few weeks ago wouldn't condemn actual open Nazis marching in Florida with homemade signs with swastikas on them made out of the state of Florida. He wouldn't condemn them, but he's really outraged over people getting an abortion or people receiving gender affirming care. And it shows this is the Republican playbook that's spreading nationwide. It's not, hey, we're worried about the size of the government anymore. We're worried about national security, X, Y, and Z. The issues that you had seen popular in the Republican Party. And now it's, how can we demonize and ostracize our perceived other? How can we humiliate our opponents? How can we dehumanize people that we've deemed to be unworthy of participating in society or full humans? And that is disgusting, but it goes beyond this. This isn't where it ends. And that's what people really need to realize. It's not just going to be rhetoric. People are going to continue to accept that, to let that, you know, bubble up within them. And that always leads to violence against these marginalized groups. And we need to be diligent in fighting back against this and stopping people like DeSantis and not treating it just like, oh, this is just a difference of opinion on trans rights. We can't both sides this kind of stuff as corporate media likes to do. This isn't an equal worthy other idea to these people are human and deserve the same rights and protections as everyone else. It's not a counterpoint. It is disgusting, it's dehumanizing, and it's vile. And we need to completely eradicate it from our society.
Yeah, and just briefly, let's also acknowledge that this supposed stance, like if it's not specifically about this attorney or this issue, it is not up to these state attorneys to decide whether they enforce the law or not. That is what they are cloaking themselves with. They're pretending that is unacceptable. Do you really think that's a consistent standard that they would apply to all issues? I mean, how many times have they raved about sheriffs and stuff like that won't enforce vaccine mandates or social distancing, those sorts of things, gun control mandates, that they love people who won't give out marriage licenses despite, you know, same-sex marriage being legalized in individual states. This is not a standard. This is not a principle. They're doing it in this one particular case because they believe it's to their benefit for all the reasons that Jordan so perfectly put there. And if you ever wonder why some of us sometimes are so enraged, it is because this is what we're up against. These people are pure evil. They're willing to ruin people's lives, end people's lives, because it might help them a little bit politically in the future. Because he wants to run and he could really use a little bit of a boost in the primaries or whatever. So if some people are denied the healthcare that they need, if people's previous rights to abortions are stripped away, they do not care. It is an utterly inhuman, dehumanizing movement that we're up against. And that is why we're enraged, not just about those Republicans, and you should be, which is why some people who might identify as on the left, when they give a complete and utter, like decade-long pass to the right, it enrages me because these people are actively targeting some of the most vulnerable communities in America. But that's not going far enough. When you have the Democrats being unwilling to use what power they have to counter these people, to not campaign in a way that gives us the least chance possible of these people staying in power or regaining power in the House or the Senate or the White House, then you should be just as enraged by them. Because it is one thing to have this evil group continually targeting the trans community, the gay community, white people, black people, whatever you want. But they also have so many people giving them an assist when it comes to the Democrats. And so we do need to focus on all of them. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the first hour. We have a lot more to get to. We'll be back in just a few.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.